Morning. I will try today to come to my speech, but before that I would have another introduction. I had the question the whole time when I was talking to you yesterday and also yesterday afternoon or evening at the fireside. What do you think, why am I telling you these stories about Southern Africa and what is happening in our country? Maybe there would be some of you who would think that, well, he's telling us this story because he wants our help. Not really, I don't think so. I think I'm just sharing it with you of what is happening in the Church of Christ in Southern Africa and how we as Christians in that part of the world are trying in all our weaknesses to confess Jesus Christ as Lord and King of all creation. And if there was something which I would expect then that the telling of these stories about Southern Africa will encourage you in your own situation here to confess more that Jesus Christ is Lord. Not necessarily in the first place that you look to Southern Africa and do then something and start projects and so. Those kind of things come spontaneously. But I'm telling it because I want to share it with you. Secondly, there might be those who think that I'm telling you the things which I'm also now going to tell you so that you must hate the white South Africans. Well, that's not the case, that's not true. I'm in fact telling you these stories so that you may love Southern Africa more and have pity on those who are oppressing us, praying for them, work for their change, not loving them with the love of this world, which usually love injustice, but loving them with the liberating love of God, which breaks down the walls, which will tell also to those people that the love of God is deeper than the deepest ocean and higher than the highest heaven. And that there will be room for all of us in that part of the world and in the whole world. I would like to give you or to tell you two stories just to illustrate that as people would accuse us that our main purpose is to throw the whites in the sea. That's what people are saying. I think we have got, I'm sure you heard a lot of bad things about Zimbabwe. Maybe it's too much that you don't even hear the good things which are taking place there. I in my sinfulness and weakness, before the independence of Zimbabwe, I thought, well, immediately after the independence of that country, the first person to be jailed should be Ian Smith. He was even given an opportunity to serve as a member of parliament. Instead of jailing Ian Smith, Mugabe jailed Musorewa. As if he was saying, well, I forgive you because of your sins, which were too much. Coming back to Southern Africa, and just to try and tell you that our main purpose of telling these stories is not to hate, but to love and to work and to be driven by that love which liberates the world, is that I think it was in 1981 or 80, I traveled from my congregation to Windhoek, the capital, together with a member of SWAPO, the liberation movement which is fighting against South Africa. He was the chairperson of the branch in that area. That's a drive of about 800 kilometers. I don't know how many miles, maybe 600 miles from Liberec to Windhoek, from the south to Windhoek. And it was during the night. And before reaching a certain town, we saw a car which had overturned. And he stopped, and I didn't know him too well. And he stopped and we got out of the car and looked around and couldn't see anybody. But after listening, we hear somebody groaning underneath the car. And we looked carefully and saw a white person there laying underneath and groaning. I was not so sure what he was really going to do, that he will say, well, that's his punishment of what they are doing to us. He took a blanket out of his car, opened it, and we took out the gentleman and put him on the blanket. And he said to me, well, you stay here, I'm driving down to the police and doctor to get them. And he drove there and contacted the police and doctor. And they came, they arrived. And the gentleman was taken to the hospital. And one of the police wanted to drive with us. And when he got in the car, he saw a sticker inside the car with the words SWAPO of Namibia, Liberation for Namibia Today, or something like that. There were many, many stickers there inside. Well, and I could see on his face how he was confused. And he asked me, what kind of work are you doing? Well, I said, I'm a pastor. And he asked my colleague, and you? And I thought he would say, well, I'm working at a service station or a garage or something like that, because he was doing work at a garage. And he said, well, I'm a member of SWAPO fighting against South Africa for the liberation of our country. And this policeman, he was so bewildered, and I think he He wanted to ask, but how could you help that man? He didn't ask. But in one of other way, he said, by what he did, he said, well, you might need some petrol. I would like to give you some free petrol from the police station. And this he was doing precisely the same thing which Matthew did, coming in the office of his father and say, Dad, I love you. This he was in that way saying to us, well, I've seen that you love us and I love you too. He gave us free petrol and we drove further on. I didn't ask the Swabo gentleman why he was doing that and what was his feelings and so on. The second example illustration which I want to give you is that when we were living in the congregation of Lüderitz, that sounds German, isn't it? At the mission station, if one may call it, there in the neighborhood there lived white South Africans, and the husband and wife were drinking heavily. They had four children or three children, and they were really not taking care of the children. And one morning at around 7 o'clock before school, a girl and a boy from that white South Africans came at our place, and my office was at the entrance, and as they knocked at my office, and I opened, and they entered, said, well, we haven't got anything to eat, and we are now going to school. Would you have a piece of bread for us? Well, that was the first time that such a thing happened, and I didn't know what shall I do now. And I knew that Elizabeth was more radical where it comes to South Africans, white South Africans, and whatever. She will say, well, I haven't got time for them, and so on. And I was not so sure, what shall I do? Shall I take them to her and ask for the piece of bread, or what shall I do? And I knew that she was in the kitchen. I couldn't sneak in the kitchen and take something. Thus, I just told them and said, well, I'm a bit busy. Would you go to the kitchen? My wife is there, and you can... Well, don't get the impression that I'm so afraid of my wife, but... But there are some occasions that I really don't know what to do and what to say, because she has got also her own word. And I showed them the way to the kitchen, and they went in there. And I don't know what I was preparing or doing. I think I was just only reading. That was really not so urgent. But I just kept on looking at the book and I was thinking, now what's happening there inside? couldn't help myself and stood up and went slowly to the kitchen and opened the door. And I saw the two children sitting there at the table. But I couldn't see my wife where she was, and I opened the door, and I saw her standing with her face on the wall. I was not so sure what she was doing, and I said hello, and she didn't respond at all. the children were eating something, and there were packages for the school prepared already. And I went near and looked at her, and I realized that she was crying. I didn't ask her up to this day why she was crying, but I think I knew. Thus, I'm really not telling you all these things to say, well, I encourage you all to give me arms, to give me weapons, so that we can together fight South Africa. And so, but telling you these things so that I might remind you of the love of God, which died, sent his only son for the sins of this world, in order to liberate them from those sins. South Africa, for the last 3, 4, 5 years, has been trying to give us internal settlement, a settlement or an independence which will camouflage or accommodate apartheid, which will give room still to apartheid, to white superiority. And they organized those whom they can buy with money. They brought them together and said, well, you are now a minister's council, you rule this country. And the people always knew what was going on and rejected those black people who were brought together to give us a kind of a pseudo independence and settlement. That's the very same thing which is taking place in Namibia. Some of you might be now confused, very much confused, of what is taking place. When you listen or read South African propaganda, you will realize that something is going on there. They will call it a new deal, a settlement. Well, we are moving away from apartheid. That's what Master P.W. Botha said when he visited Europe a few months ago. And some people will ask, well, what do you want then? South Africa is moving away from apartheid. While South Africa is in fact modernizing apartheid and consolidating it, you have got a unique government now in South Africa, installed a few weeks ago, a government based on race and color, where the more than 20 million has been excluded, mainly the blacks. Thus you have got a House of Representatives for coloreds, so-called coloreds. You have got the House of Representatives for Indians. And those serving in these different houses, the representatives or the member of parliament for the Indians hasn't got anything to say to white South Africa or to so-called colored South Africa. He is only a minister for the Indians. And then people will call it a new deal, a step forward. That's in fact a step backward. That's kind of settlements which are trying still to lessen the pressure on apartheid and the apartheid government. One shouldn't call it now, they used to call it a South African democracy. I think one should call it a bit different. We have got now in South Africa a real South African pigmentocracy. I don't know whether this word is... Would you pronounce it much more better?
Pigmentocracy,
yes. It's not a democracy at all, or a racocracy, or whatever. The same thing is now happening in Namibia. they organized or they brought together all those political groupings which do support South Africa, or in a way doesn't work against them, brought them together and called them the multi-party conference, saying that these people will be then the people who will work out the program for the independence of Namibia. The church, as well as the overwhelming majority of the Namibians, has rejected this so-called multi-party conference, because they have been imposed on us. That's not the will of the people. What the people want is that they say, let there be nationwide elections. Not under supervision of South Africa, but under supervision of the nations of the world. Because any settlement organized under supervision and control of South Africa will not be at all a fair election. We have got also, and it was consolidated last year or 2 years ago, 11 ethnic governments according to the ethnic groups. Thus, you are a member of that government, whether you like it or not, on the basis of your race or your ethnic background. You have got people, well, we have got in Namibia, that's true, ethnic groupings. But the walls of divisions, as it was in the past, between the ethnic groupings has crumbled. People are intermarrying. I am Herero speaking, my wife is Nama speaking. And as we say in our house, we are Namibians. I remember one day our boy of 10 years came back from school and said, well, our class teacher wants to fill out a form where we should say who is our chief or headman and to which race we belong and so on. I said, well, go and tell that teacher that we haven't got a chief, for because I know that those chiefs are all supporters of South Africa. We haven't got a chief. Our only chief is our Lord. And we don't belong to any ethnic group. We are Namibians, that's all. Well, my wife said, well, the boy was not so happy with that kind of thing. Said, but the teacher would really demand it from me. I said, well then, but you go and tell him that. Or I will go and tell him if you are afraid. But my wife said, well, let's use a bit of diplomacy here. You mustn't mention about your father at all. You go and say, we are Nama speaking, and our chief is Hendrik Wetboy. Now, fortunately, the chief of her ethnic group is much more progressive and really working against the South African regime. And the whole family of the Wetboys was known for fighting against "Let's die fighting." That was their slogan. And then she said, well, you go and say our chief is Hendrik Wetboy and we belong to the Nama-speaking people. I said, well, but no, remember, just to come out of that problem, you remember, you know, that we are Namibians anyway. That's fine. But the boy asked, now, why are you so insisting on that we are Namibians? Yes, we are Namibians. What are you? I am Herero speaking. Your mother is Nama speaking. What are you then? You are Namibians. We are Namibians. And I could, as Walter also did with Juni, saw in his eyes the happiness. A burden came down from his shoulders. Said, "Well, I understand now. That's true. I'm going to tell the story Mother told me, but I know what we are. We are Namibians, and our chief is the Lord." But I said, "Now, why are you? What happened? Why are you understanding it now suddenly?" He said, "Well, if you have got a cat and a dog, and that cat and dog got a child, you can't call that child of a cat and dog a cat or a dog. You should call it a cat dog or something like that. This we are somewhere in between. We are Namibians." We are cat dogs. Because we know that if we say we are cats or we are Namibians, we exclude. If I say we are dogs, then I exclude myself from the cats. And I fall rightly in what they want us to be. Divide et impera. Divide them and rule them easily. Because when they come together, they will be strong. Talk of the whites, although they are also different ethnic groupings, nations, talk of them of whites. But when it comes to blacks, divide them in their ethnic groupings so that you can rule them. Yes, we are that clever. This whole strategies of trying to give us internal settlement has been rejected by the churches, by the overwhelming people of Namibia. I'm sure you will be told here in the United States, well, that's a small group which reject ethnicity. They all are ethnic groups and so. We know we are ethnic. We have got ethnic groupings. But we know that it will not give hope for Namibia. But our unity will be our liberation. That's why we insist on that. And maybe that some of you will ask me, to which ethnic group do you belong, or what's your mother tongue? I'm hesitant to talk about that. I say, well, I'm a Namibian, and I'm speaking four Namibian languages of the six languages. We have got in Namibia a situation of institutionalized terrorism or legalized terrorism. Because to impose all these structures on the people, you have to use violence to enforce them on the people. And thus we have got a situation of legalized terrorism in Namibia. The people, especially in the northern part of Namibia, are living day and night under paralyzing fear. I visited the area, I'm living in the central area, but I visited the area and could see really that it is an unbearable situation. A friend of mine, a colleague of mine who was working with me in the congregation in the far south of Namibia, visited northern Namibia after a time of, say, 3 years. And their home was quite near the border, about, say, 15 kilometers from the Angolan-Namibian border. And at home, when he arrived at home in the evening, he washed and took out his pyjamas and lay down. And the people were glaring at him, the people in the house. And after quite a while, he couldn't understand, why are the people looking at me like that? And he asked, what's wrong? Am I doing something unusual? He said, yes. You are putting on your pyjamas. What's wrong with that? Well, we are not doing that in this part of the world. We go and sleep with our clothes, and the shoes are our pillows, so that when they come during the night, you take the shoes easily and jump up. Otherwise, you will be taken in that pyjamas. And he realized that we in the central and southern part of Namibia really don't know what the suffering of those people are. The Lutheran Church in northern Namibia, for now more than 8 years, doesn't celebrate Christmas during evenings. And the tradition was all the years that on the 24th evening, the congregations will come together, or the people will come together, celebrating the day of the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ, with a huge Christmas tree. Well, I know it hasn't got anything to do with Christianity, but it has been part of our Christian tradition, that the people will gather there, and the young people, the children, will recite verses from the Bible, Luke 2. For more than now 8 years, the people in northern Namibia doesn't do it anymore because of the curfew. From 6 o'clock in the evening to 6 o'clock in the morning, nobody should move. And if you try that, you'll be shot dead. The world has been shouting, and rightly, sure, about the imposing of what was that in Poland? Sanctions. Yeah, not sanctions, but martial law in Poland. But we've got the most cruel martial law in northern Namibia. If really the Western nations could have shouted and screamed as they were doing against martial law in Poland, I think things could have been much more better in Namibia by this time. This the people are living under fear day and night, and that dusk to dawn curfew has limited even the work of the church. Many people are dying because of that curfew. You can't take a mother who is expecting a baby to the clinic when the time is there. There is no excuse for that. You have to wait until 6 o'clock in the morning. Or if somebody gets seriously ill during the night, you have to wait until 6 o'clock in the morning. And there's many, many, many people died. Because some people, or many people, that's a rural area, and some people are so far away from clinics and hospitals that sometimes it's only that young mother and grandmother. The husband works somewhere in the south in the mines. And when there is illness, you have to wait until the other morning. And then you have got, I think there are more than 100,000 South African soldiers in that area, assisted in certain kind of tactics of chasing the guerrillas. Tactics are being used from Latin America. There have been and there are advisors from Chile, from El Salvador, from Guatemala. About, say, 3 years ago, the South Africans were denying that there were such advisors in Namibia. This year, they have been saying, well, at our parade or at our military show, we have had the representatives of Guatemala and El Salvador giving advice to the army on how to deal with the guerrillas. There's, you have got what they call the special squad, which is called Kufut, literally translated crowbar. Does that make some sense to you? I don't know why they are calling it. And this group is wearing Swapo uniforms, going around, visiting the villages, and asking for food, posing as Swapo guerrillas. And the overwhelming majority of the people in northern Namibia are really for Swapo. I don't know whether you had a chance to read the reports, the two reports of the British Council of Churches delegation, which visited northern Namibia, and which their report said, well, that's the case. Where we came, people would say, or well, we'll talk of the Swapo guerrillas as our boys in the bushes, and of the terrorists, meaning the South African soldiers. There's this special squad, Kufut, will go from village to village, pose as Swapo guerrillas, and ask for food, and when people give it, they will be then all rounded up, taken for torture, or even shot dead. When the Roman Catholic, South African Roman Catholic bishops visited the north last year and reported about this kind of a situation, their report was banned by the South Africans. I would like to take some examples of what is happening with the church. And when I'm talking of the church, I'm not only meaning the Lutheran church, but mainly the Lutherans, Anglicans, and Catholics. And the Lutheran church is the biggest one in that area, or in the whole of Namibia. Now, and I'm quoting here from, I'm taking this information out of the report of Bishop Dr. Cleophas Tumeni, the bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Obambo Kabango Church. On the 18th of March, and I think that's good that I give you these incidents which really took place with the dates and names. Because when one is talking of apartheid and suffering and that kind of things, it's so far away, and you hear it, and it's like reading a book, a very interesting book, but it hasn't got life in itself. This, I don't want to take out the truth out of the Namibian situation, but I would like to share the truth within the context of the Namibian situation. I'm thinking now of preaching and teaching. That was the Sunday, the 18th of March this year. It was not the last century or 30 years ago. This year, a few months ago, according to our prayer book, the Sunday is called Reminiscere, was called Reminiscere according to the church here. Remember, O Lord, your kindness. Remember, O Lord, your mercy. And constant love which you have shown from long ago. That Sunday's name comes from the Psalm 25, verse 6. On that day, the South African military force went around and took all the people who were on their way to the church services. They took them on in their military trucks. All of those who were on their way to church service. Men, women, and the majority were young people. On the 18th of March. Some people were on their way to celebrate Holy Communion. Some of them were on their way with kids on their backs. I don't know whether you know how we are carrying little babies in Namibia. They'll be carried on their backs, very warm and with all of love. And so they were then with their babies taken by the military to a certain spot at the military camps. And in some of the congregations, even church services were disrupted. The soldiers just came in and told the pastors to stop. I remember in one congregation where they came into the church building. At that moment, when the pastor was starting to celebrate the Holy Communion liturgy with the bread and the cup in the one hand, he was immediately told to put down the things. He was arrested. The soldiers came in and took all the male persons out of the church service. Now, I've got this report with me. Well, not all of them, but of some of them I've got it with me. Most of these reports are with the Lutheran World Ministries in New York. If you would like to be interested to read it. Thus, the church services were interrupted on that day by a Christian South African army, which is fighting against communism and which is being supported by the administration of this country as a colleague in fighting against communism. Now, it seems as if the Lutheran Church particularly is that communism which is being fought against. Even nurses from the church hospitals were prevented going to serve. They were taken on the military trucks. And so the services were disrupted in this way. And when the bishop protested against that, he was told that it is for security reasons, for the safety of Namibia, for the sake of law and order, that all these things are being done, and he should be grateful. The second incident took place on the 25th of July. Not the last century again, but this year, 1984. Soldiers, it was the time when we were in Budapest during the assembly. We received this message, this telegram from the church office of the Evangelical Lutheran of Ambokabango Church while we were busy with the Lutheran World Federation Assembly, Seventh Assembly. On the 25th of July, early in the morning, the South African soldiers arrived at the Onanjokwe Lutheran Hospital. That's the biggest hospital in the northern part of Namibia. which has been serving many, many people for many years. They arrived there at around 8 o'clock in the morning with military trucks, with guns, and surrounded the hospital. And the commander came to the matron's office and wanted to see three things. The first one was they wanted to search the whole hospital inside for guerrillas. They wanted to search the whole hospital. The second thing, they wanted to see all the male patients. And the third thing, they wanted the names of all the people working there at the hospital. Well, it was just informing her. It was not really asking for permission. And she said, well, yes, I will tell the doctor in charge at the moment and allow you then to go in. And there's about 10 to 15 soldiers went into the hospital, while the others were outside surrounding the hospital. And they searched the hospital for almost 2 hours. The workers were not allowed to be in. They were all told, the nurses and everybody were told to go outside. They didn't know what they really do and what they talk to the patients and what they say. And while they were, now the personnel, the staff there were in the administrative office. They gathered in the administrative office. Some of the patients were outside. And one of the patients who was there outside saw a soldier digging a hole and putting in something there. And she first thought she would report it, but she said, well, maybe that's something, nothing important. But fortunately, she reported it to the matron. And that thing was buried near the maternity hall. The matron contacted the church office, and the secretary of the church contacted immediately the police, who came then immediately there, and they were shown the place where that something was buried in, and they took it out, saying that was a bomb, a very powerful bomb, a time bomb, which could have destroyed the whole maternity hall. It was not an empty maternity hall. That's the hospital which is operating. And they said that it was very, very dangerous, and they took the thing out and disconnected it, or I don't know what they did, and so, and took it away. And the bishop immediately contacted the chief of army there, and he sent somebody after a few hours. And that somebody came and said, well, I've seen that thing which was, that bomb which was taken out, but that's really not so dangerous at all. And he told the bishop that they will come after 2 days to search the whole hospital because they suspect that Swapo has planted some weapons there in the hospital. He didn't pay at all attention at that bomb at all. Well, he promised that they will investigate the thing and report it back. Until I left Namibia on the 18th of July, of September, I didn't hear anything of that report. That's the things which are taking place there. And as I said in the beginning, we are telling you these things to share with you, not in order that you should hate those people who are doing that, but to work together with us to liberate that country. While I'm talking to you and speaking to you about these things, I'm asking myself, what does reformation mean to us in that kind of a situation? What does the Theologia Crucis mean to us in that kind of a situation of suffering? What does it mean to be a Lutheran church in that agony and suffering? We believe, and that's how we are trying to understand Reformation. We believe that Reformation should not only be celebrated, it should also not only be taught, but it should be lived. We shouldn't only hear Reformation, but we must feel it and see it, what Reformation is. Sola fide, sola gratia. What does it mean in that particular situation? Alone the faith, alone the grace. To us, is that word a word of hope and confidence? It gives us so much strength. Alone the faith and alone the grace. That's all which will liberate you. Not the race and the color. Not the God of the race and the color, but alone the faith in the living God and His grace. That's all that you need. Reformation starts with me as a person. It doesn't really start with the structures. And when we look to Luther, we realize immediately that it started with Luther himself. It didn't start with a confrontation against with the structures, the Roman Catholic Church structures, but it started inside Luther himself. Christians, we should be reformed reformers. We are reformed reformers. Reformed or transformed, I don't know whether I use these words correctly, and I've got the desire now to speak in my own language to express myself much more better, but I think I will just waste your time. You won't understand the word. Reformed or transformed from evil, from our selfish lives, from the false foundations of believing that what we do, our good works, are the things which will liberate us. But transformed to faith, believing that alone the grace of God can do miracles in our lives. We've been transformed into co-workers in sharing, in liberation, and reformation, not only of Namibia, but of the whole world. We do cry. We did cry in Namibia in 1980. And a service was, a worship service was conducted in our congregation in remembrance of Archbishop Oscar Romero of San Salvador. We doesn't only cry about our suffering, but we cry about the suffering affecting the whole world. We pray also for you,
That's really not only you who are praying for us, but in our church services, we have got a church prayer which has been banned in northern Namibia. I'm sorry that I didn't bring it with me. Where we pray for our sons and daughters who left the country and who have been scattered all over the world. We pray for the brothers and sisters from all over the world who are taking care of these refugees for their love and affection towards our cause. Yes, we do pray for you. We believe that not Luther, but Jesus Christ is the only foundation. And no other foundation can be left. And that's because of this faith that we oppose and fight against the South African government. No other foundation but Jesus Christ. We reject all those gods of race, color, and ethnicity, and whatever you. Luther, when the truth dawned to him, he took a clear decision. And that has been encouraging to us in our situation. I'm sure on Sunday, the 23rd of the last Sunday, there was a memorial service, a Thanksgiving service in Namibia where I was asked to preach, but I couldn't be there. A day of Thanksgiving for the release of some of the prisoners from Robben Island and from an army concentration camp in Namibia. And I'm nearly sure that the first hymn they sang there was the song, "A Mighty Frost Fortress is Our God." I remember at this moment, especially this verse, when they to take our home, goods, honor, child or spouse, though life be wrenched away, they cannot win the day. The kingdom is ours forever. Thus, Luther didn't only preach and teach the Theologia Crucis, but he lived it. He took the Via Dolorosa. And that's what is giving so much strength to his witness. He didn't sit in his comfortable office and teach all these things, but he really took the Via Dolorosa, followed the footsteps of his Lord. That's why he could say, "Here I stand. I have no other way. God help me." He decided to take the Via Dolorosa in his life. And if we, and that's what we are trying to do in Namibia, in our weaknesses and fearfulness, not only to be the church of the Reformation, but, or not only to proclaim the Theologia Crucis, but to take this way of suffering, the way to the cross. Of course, many, also in Southern Africa, fear to join what I would call the confessing church. And that's the one sign of hope in Southern Africa, and especially in Namibia, that we all, Roman Catholic, Lutherans, whoever, we all are Protestants, protesting against the evil structures, destroying the human relationships and threatening the whole of humanity. I remember at the commemorial service of remembering the death of Bishop Awala, the late Bishop Awala, who died last year on the 4th of December and was buried on Human Rights Day, the 10th of December. After that, we had a service in Vendu, and the preacher there at that service, remembering a Lutheran bishop, was a Roman Catholic bishop, Father Heinrich Henning. And he proposes as the amazing, as the first hymn before his sermon, "A mighty fortress is our God." I wish you were there, or else you won't believe it. We believe that the church of the Reformation shouldn't look back only to the 15th century and the shaking of the foundations of that time, but should shake also the false foundations of our times. Believing in faith that Jesus Christ disarmed and triumphed over these false foundations. We know that they are dangerous, but we know also and believe that Christ disarmed and triumphed over them. Sola fide, sola gratia. The St. John in his first letter saying, "This is the victory that overcomes the world." And that's our faith. Here I stand. I can't do otherwise. God, help me. That should be the spirit of the Church of the Reformation. Forgetting the too much underlining of we are Lutherans, but be really the Church of Reformation, even together with the Roman Catholics. When I was in Holland, and I'm concluding now, a South African, white South African student at the Free University of Amsterdam asked a question. I don't know why he did that. He said, "Do you really believe that Namibia will be ever free?" And the Lord is always with his people where you don't really know what to say. I was hearing myself asking a question which I didn't prepare. Asking him, "Do you believe that the sun will rise tomorrow?" And I was surprised also at the question which I was asking. And so was he. And after a few moments, he said, "Well, yes, that's no question at all. The sun will rise." And I said, "Well, that's really also no question. Namibia will be free. I might die tonight, but my death will not affect the rising of the sun tomorrow." And that's the victory over the world, our faith. Thank you very much.